Good evening. I'm Rick Cottom. Welcome to Your Maryland. On May 23, 1862, in the second spring of the American Civil War, one of those remarkable meetings took place that easily might have turned into tragedy. A federal regiment of infantry, the 1st Maryland, was largely composed of young men from Baltimore who had answered Lincoln's call for volunteers in the first days of the war. In May 1861, it had mustered at Camp Carroll near Mount Clare, where a group of prominent Union ladies had presented it with a silk flag they had sewn themselves. Its colonel was John Reese Kenly, a Mexican War veteran and well-known attorney, so highly thought of that he and his men were soon asked to help police the city. A year later, Kenly and his men, numbering just over 1,000, found themselves attached to a larger federal force in the Shenandoah Valley, commanded by Nathaniel Preston Banks, an energetic Massachusetts politician. Banks sent Kenly and his single regiment to garrison Front Royal, a small village situated on low ground where two valleys converged out of the surrounding hills. They were on the lookout for a Confederate army that was known to be active in the valley, so Kenly put out guard posts and told his men to stay alert. Still, it was beautiful and quiet as the sun fell on the evening of May 22, 1862, and the men rolled up in their blankets. They had no way of knowing the trouble that lurked in the hills just a few miles away, in the form of a tall, blue-eyed killer, a devoutly religious military genius who had fixed his cold glare on Front Royal. Thomas J. Stonewall Jackson was intent on destroying the whole of Nathaniel Banks's army. Kenly and Front Royal were in the way. The next afternoon, Jackson struck Front Royal with the fury of a panther. As he drove Kenly's terrified pickets back into the town, he rode up to the top of one of the hills overlooking Front Royal and learned that those were Marylanders down below. His eyes glowed and he sent word back along his column to bring up another 1st Maryland, this one wearing gray. Among them, too, were men from Baltimore, men who had had to make their way through the federal lines to fight for the South. They raced forward singing, "Baltimore, ain't you happy? We'll anchor by and by." With a regiment of Louisiana Tigers, they charged down into the town. As they pursued the retreating Federals through the streets, a girl of about 15 appeared and shouted, "Go it, boys! Maryland, whip Maryland!" Kenly didn't panic. Though heavily outnumbered, the Mexican War veteran led his men in a fighting withdrawal, while on the hills above, Jackson raged that his artillery wasn't coming up fast enough. Jackson made it clear he wanted every Federal dead. But it wasn't to be. Kenly's men held off the Confederate infantry, and charge after charge by determined gray-clad cavalry, until late in the day the numbers weighed against him. His lines began to crack. 120 of his men managed to escape. A similar number lay on the field. The rest were captured. What happened next tells us something about that awful war. On the night after the fighting, some of the Maryland Confederates visited the prisoners' camp to share their food and water with their erstwhile neighbors. Since they were young, for the most part, they probably also talked of girls, mutual friends, and perhaps even baseball, since a few of the Confederates had until recently been the stars of the Waverly team. It was the kind of moment that would occur less frequently as the war turned hard. And in fact, later, after Jackson and the Maryland Confederates had moved on, racing after Banks, the guards who conveyed the captured Federals to the prison camp at Belle Isle and to Libby Prison robbed them of money and personal possessions. Northern newspapers howled that the prisoners were subjected to every sort of mistreatment. Kenly said otherwise. "The Marylanders of Front Royal," he said, "treated one another well, like the friends they once were. It was a moment of kindness and charity in this war between brothers."